there's some serious stuff going on right now over in Iraq, in Baghdad. I'm sure you saw the videos. You saw a lot of hyperventilating. You saw a lot of misinformation. Oh, this is Trump's Benghazi. Well, there actually are some similarities to Benghazi, in my opinion, but not in the way that they're wanting you to think. And I want to get into the details of what really is going on there and what the Trump administration's doing about it. Joining us to discuss it is a senior fellow over at the Gold Institute for International Strategy, Matthew Brodsky. Mr. Brodsky, welcome to the program.
Pleasure to be with you.
And you do do agree that the end of the decade will be next year, right? Not tomorrow.
You know, it's funny. I guess I'm now officially old enough where I can recall the exact same debate 10 years ago and 10 years before, and I think that's pretty much where everyone weighed in. So actually, I think people kind of shifted between the zero and then the one based on if they wanted to celebrate it twice.
So that's what it is. And if the whole purpose of the debate is to have double celebrations, I'm on board with that. Give me another party,
exactly.
And I'm okay with it. Listen, it is harrowing what we're seeing. The images are pretty rough to look at as you see this horde, this mob, storming the gates of America's biggest embassy in the world in Baghdad. First of all, can we walk back a little bit and tell us how this began? It really started with the murder at the hands of Hezbollah terrorists of an American contractor, right, a couple of days ago.
Right. So you've, but to even back up a bit before then, you've had a series of escalating actions by Iran throughout the region, from, you know, what they've been doing with kidnapping people, taking over tankers, and of course the ongoing conflict they have with Israel and Syria when it comes to shipping their weapons. They've been waiting to see what would cause a kinetic or military type of response from the U.S.
And Mr. Brett, if I can pause you there, because you just said these are actions at the hands of Iran. There's no ambiguity there. There's no guesswork. This isn't a preponderance of the evidence kind of thing. You just said it flat out. Is there any doubt in anyone's mind that Iran is behind all of this?
No, it's absolutely Iran. Even the idea of their proxies in Iraq, or like Hezbollah, for instance, in Lebanon, the fact is that they themselves admit that they are completely directed, funded, and politically activated by Iran.
Okay,
so
great.
It doesn't matter what uniform they happen to be wearing on a different day or what flag they're calling.
This good to know.
Iran's activity, completely directed by them. And the... there have been about 20 or so rocket attacks from these so-called Iranian proxies. They're basically paramilitary forces that are Iranian-directed by the IRGC Quds Force through Iraq, and they've already been launching rockets at U.S. positions in Iraq for a good period of time. They didn't manage to kill any Americans, so the U.S. didn't have a military response, but of course... now we did, because a U.S. citizen was killed, and that sends a very strong message, hopefully of deterrence, to Iran that it should pause right now and reconsider what it's trying to accomplish.
Yeah, and we had the spokesman from the State Department, Morgan Organza, on yesterday to talk about that robust response, as it was about 48 hours ago, from the United States military to send that message that it won't be tolerated. That's certainly been the Trump doctrine. So that brings us to this morning, in Baghdad time at least. And I said that there were some similarities here with Benghazi. From what I'm learning, it looks as though the security forces that come from the Baghdad government, the Iraqi government, it looks like they didn't do their job in protecting our embassy. Am I getting that reported correctly?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what happened. What you have is so many people controlled by Iran in the government, and of course the most powerful militias that are run in Iraq by Iran, they're the ones who stormed the embassy. This was no protest movement, which you can see on various mainstream television networks. It's not a protest movement. There has been a protest movement since October in Iraq of the people against corruption of the Iraqi politicians, who they recognize correctly are being dominated and controlled by Iran. This was a militia orchestrated takeover attempt of our embassy. So the closest parallel, actually, is the 1979 takeover of the U.S. embassy in Tehran. This is something that they were apparently trying to accomplish, but didn't work. the Iraqi security forces pretty much seemed to stand aside and allow this to occur. Because I mentioned already these the protests that have been going on with the people since October against Iran inside of Iraq. People have actually tried to get into the green zone where our embassy is located. They've been shot. That didn't happen at all today. So apparently the security forces there seem to know, well, if they shoot Iraqi protesters who are protesting against Iran, you won't have a problem with Iran's proxies. But you can't shoot Iran's proxies if they're
right.
coming after the embassy.
And so now where does this stand? I've seen the Secretary of Defense Esper has announced that there's an additional 200, 300 Marines that have been sent there to fortify the embassy. Were American lives ever at any real risk here during this escapade, or was this really more of a made-for-television kind of event?
Well, U.S. Marines are the ones who are tasked with providing the close level of security, though clearly, according to international law, the host government is supposed to take care of that, which, as you point out, that didn't happen today. I think that the extra soldiers are definitely going to be warranted there because you have very provocative action. It's what you have is Iran essentially controlling the levers of power inside of Iraq almost to the degree that it does through Hezbollah inside of Lebanon. So they can lay in the background and send their own messages. They don't need to outright, rip off the mask, so to speak, and control everything directly so that it's so visible to everyone. They can get their messages across. The U.S. is doing the right thing to make sure that we are defending our embassy, because this is the type of escalation that they're trying to cause. Their game, incidentally, Iran, is to get the U.S. out of Iraq. They're trying to get the protest movement that is happening in Iraq that I was just talking about, to get that focus shifted to the United States, so that yeah. people would then blame the U.S. But unfortunately for the regime in Iran, that's not working. The people who are protesting in Iraq, in Lebanon, and throughout the Middle East, frankly, know that it is Iran behind so much of the problems that they're facing, and that's why they want Iran out, frankly, not the United States out, which is a totally different narrative than what we've probably grown accustomed to.
Matthew Brodsky is our guest, a senior fellow at the Gold Institute for International Strategy, talking about the events unfolding in Baghdad. And I say unfolding, have they finished unfolding? What is the situation now, our latest information? Are things now under control? Has the mob sort of subdued? Have they gone their separate ways, or what's happening? Do you know?
Latest I've seen is that there still are protesters there, and I would only parenthetically add that I'm sure they're the best paid if they're spending New Year's Eve, basically carrying the torch for Iran against the U.S. there. But I mean, the fact is they're still burning whatever cars or something like that, but yeah. it's tapered away, and it seems as though for now at least that the Iraqi security forces, who are not run by Iran, have the situation under control. The fact is the U.S. is still maintained its position, didn't evacuate its,
right.
The embassy.
Right.
So I think things are well under control, but the fact is this was the message that Iran was sending. So they can clearly turn this on to whatever extent they want, when they want. And that's, of course, the reason why our Defense Department is beefing up our security there.
Now, you said a moment ago that the goal here is to get the U.S. out of Iraq, the goal of the goal of Iran, the goal of the Hezbollah Iranian puppets. First, the question is, how in Iraq are we? I mean, we don't have a giant presence there, obviously, talking beyond our embassy there and the personnel to run our embassy. But in terms of our military footprint, what is the current troop level there? Do you know?
Yeah, we're really around 5,000 people there. And we're not in Iraq, like you say, wandering streets with our, weapons.
Right. It's not the occupation. It's not the occupation of 2011 or 2010.
Nothing
by
remotely
any stretch.
Like yeah. that. We are in fixed bases away from civilians, basically. That's what we're doing. That's also why it's been so easy for these militias to target us our locations and bases over the past year, you know, and they, again, didn't manage to kill us. But this isn't anything remotely like an occupation. It's a incredibly smart stay-on force that we have there with which we are allowed to affect many things. So, and we're not involved in the political situation to the extent that Iran is, of course, pulling the strings of what goes on in the government. And because our military footprint is, as I described it, that's why the people who are on the streets who have been protesting, the real people who have been doing this since October, are protesting Iran, because they recognize that it's the U.S. and our positions that they can't see or don't run into in a day-to-day basis. We're not the cause of the problems that they have in their government system. That's Iran, which they can see in the graffiti that they're printing, that they're spray painting day to day, including on our embassy today, and which says we're run by Qassem Soleimani. He's the Quds Force commander in Iran.
And by the way, Matthew Brodsky, if I remember right, it's not like there's any level of natural affinity there for the man on the street, as it were, in Iraq and the Iranian regime. I mean, this goes not only to a battle between the Persians and the ethnic Arabs that are from the Iraqi region, but also religiously, the Shiites, the Shia Muslims from Iran, they don't have a giant influence. I mean, there's some that have influence in Iraq, but that's not the predominant influence, is it?
Right. The idea since the 1980s that from one side or the other, between Iran or Iraq, that one would attack and then the Shia on the other side would somehow be supportive of them. And that was the part of the idea that Iran thought it would be able to press into Iraq in the 80s, and that around Basra, the oil-rich area near the Gulf in Iraq, that those Shia would rise up and join in Iran. That didn't materialize decades ago. And still, the idea of nationalism has taken root there. They perceive of themselves as Iraqi. There is a majority Shia population inside of Iraq, but it's not to the extent that they seek domination by Iranian Persians. That's not at all what they want.
Right, and that's the only way there is any legitimate, or well, not legitimate, but any significant Iranian influence in the nation of Iraq is through domination. That's just how Iran does things.
Correct, and how Iran does things even more with this type of plan is, so they know that they already have the Shia domination already naturally by population size in Iraq.
Okay.
But they're trying to create their land corridors or land bridge basically into to Lebanon. So in Syria, which is 80% Sunni, far more than Iraq, they're engaged in a repopulation type of schemes where they're trying to, along these three major arteries that they're trying to have overland shipment lanes for missiles and other offensive weaponry, they're trying to repopulate those areas so that they're gained levels of loyalty. But it's the Middle East as well. They have money, Iran does, and in the case of Syria, they're able to pay tribesmen money no matter what the religion is and say, we're going to give you a better deal. So, you know, the Middle East is not short on conflict, and Iran certainly knows how to play those strengths.
Well, if we've learned anything over the last 50 years, that certainly should be one of the lessons. And actually, to that end, I've got one more big question that takes a little bit of time, and I'm a little bit up against it. Can you stick with me for one more segment?
Sure.
Okay, because there's one more question, and I'll go ahead and throw it out there, and then you can ponder it for a moment, and our listeners can ponder it as well. The people protesting, the people screaming death to America, the people who are burning things in front of our embassy want America out of there. And from my perspective, I need to know this as an American citizen, after the billions of dollars spent in that country, after the priceless blood that's been spilt there and the lives that have been lost there and the limbs that have been lost there, after all of this time and after all of the training of the military, who it looks as like stepped aside and allowed this protest to continue as the security forces that we've trained didn't do their job to protect the embassy, I got to ask, why shouldn't we leave? Why should we stay there? I'll ask Matthew Brodsky that for a moment, in a moment. In fact, I'll ask you that. 888-630-WMAL. And we are continuing our conversation with Matthew R.J. Brodsky. He's a senior fellow over at the Gold Institute for International Strategy. And I have no time to get into the double initials there in the middle, the R.J. part. Matt. We'll have to leave that for another time, and I hope there will be another time. Welcome to the program today as we discuss what's going on in Iraq, the horrific scenes that we saw in front of the American embassy, and a robust response for the Trump administration, by the way. You know, Marines deployed, flyovers from the helicopters. I mean, anyone who wants to tell you this is Trump's Benghazi is smoking something. No. You might want to check them on that. But my question to you is this. I mean, death to America screamed from the streets, bonfires and cars flipped over and set on fire in front of the embassy. And again, the deepest cut of all, the security force. And I got to think that the Iraqi government, along with the U.S. embassy, they picked the best of the best to be the ones who guarded our embassy and made sure that nothing went down there like this. And they stepped aside and sort of let this happen. Why should we stay there at this point?
So let's back up, and I would say to answer this question, we need to, I would say, file this under the we need to learn from our mistakes, but do not overcorrect them. Now, when you have another president from a different party come in, they have a tendency, clearly, to do the exact opposite of what the preceding administration did. There's a lot that we could learn to choose the Goldilocks type of policy, the middle ground here. So, if we, not to relitigate our decision in 2003 to knock over Saddam Hussein in Iraq, but the fact is, when we didn't win the peace and we're having a large amount of difficulty there, we decided in a controversial decision to have a surge of U.S. forces in 2007. Yeah. By the time Obama came into office in 2009, he was handed a pacified Iraq where literally we had done the hard work, learned the hard way, and the we were there, but the situation was pretty much solved, and we were still involved in helping in the political system. What occurred is Obama decided that he wanted to withdraw very quickly all America's troops. And he actually had Biden, who's running for president, of course, in charge of this in 2011. So this was to pull the U.S. troops out. By pulling out U.S. troops, this led to the creation, or I should say the metamorphosis, of Al-Qaeda in Iraq into what became known as ISIS, the Islamic State, yeah. Iraq and Syria. This is what allowed that to happen. It was, incidentally, the formation of this Sunni terrorist awakening group that prompted Iran then to create its own paramilitary force inside of Iran, the very same ones, incidentally, who are sacking our embassy today in Baghdad. So this is what led to that. So we should learn, incidentally, that getting out of places completely and quickly without having any figure for what we're going to do afterward is probably the wrong decision.
In fact, we'll make it that much worse. Sadly, you know what? Can you stick with me a little longer? Because it is important, and you've already delved into it. Can you wait a little bit more? All right. Sorry.
Sure.
But we continue here. I should have known. It was a stupid of me to think in 2 minutes. Anyone can give the answer to this question, Matthew Brodsky, even somebody smart like you, about whether it's time to get out of there. And so if I can sort of sum up where you were there in the middle of your answer, God forbid we do what the Obama administration did, which was, you know, there was no status of forces agreement. They pulled out precipitously. There was no transition. We got out of there, and there was a huge vacuum created. That's what brought us ISIS. That gave us that caliphate from the borders of Iraq all the way into Syria. No, certainly not that. But at the same time, is it time to assess that it is perhaps the end of America's role in a robust military way in Iraq? And is there a way to progressively transition so that we no longer have that responsibility?
See, here's that line of logic works, but only if you're at a point in human history where people are walking around with the greatest weapon is like a spear or a sword. If the main issue in the region is, as we correctly read it under the Trump administration, they certainly see it this way, Iran possessing a nuclear weapon is the main problem. All of these things, all of these areas are symptoms of that struggle right now. So to pull out of Iraq, to pull out of Syria, is to not only give Iran additional avenues to make money, to which again lessens the point of our economic pressure campaign, which is to get Iran to make a decision without having to strike them, which is a smart decision the president has been going after. These are, by simply giving up this territory and area, we allow Iran to become that much more powerful. We spark a nuclear arms race in the Middle East. It forces Israel to have a much sooner type of attack on nuclear facilities inside of Iran, because from their perspective, there's no way that they would tolerate a nuclear armed Iran. These are all things that a small U.S. presence help prevent. In Syria, for instance, the just 1,000 troops that we have in northeastern Syria, we're literally sitting on top of a territory that Russia wants, that Assad, who of course has murdered some 500,000 Syrians, and that Iran is of course after, and that Turkey to a degree is wanted. We have something that everyone wants, and we've done it by having 1,000 troops in a background role relying on Kurdish partner forces. So it's that actually happens to be a perfect example of how you can learn from past mistakes. You don't need 500,000 troops or to keep 10,000 troops even to have these type of effects that benefit U.S. interests. You can do this in a background role. So I think what we're doing actually makes a lot of sense in Iraq. It certainly makes sense to remain in Syria to the extent that we are. And I know, as you point out, there is no quick, you know, 1 second version, and the whole idea of, well, they want us to leave, so why don't we leave? That's the point of the protest you're seeing today in Baghdad.
Right.
They're put on by Iran, and they want you to see this, the viewer in the United States to see it and say, I'm done with it. That is to vacillate between one extreme or the other and simply not learn any lessons from the past 20 or 30 years from any interventions that we have. It's not one or the other. We can learn and apply those lessons.
Is the conflict in Iraq right now that the United States military is engaged in, does it have less to do with our original foray into Iraq and really is now sort of morphed in a way to a proxy war with Iran? Is that really what we're witnessing here?
See, we're not in a proxy war with Iran. The funny part is, I mean, since the U.S. our military needs authorization for the use of military force, we can respond defensively, which is why in all the language that you've seen from the State Department and Defense Department regarding the 5 sites that we struck.
Yeah, it was a defensive action. Yeah.
Also defensive in it.
Right. Yeah.
So we're not in that proxy kinetic military type of struggle. Israel, in fact, is throughout Syria and here and there in Iraq, where it's warranted because of the type of weapons being shipped. But the U.S. is relying primarily on economic pressure. This is all designed to give Iran the point to make a decision where it has to come to the table and negotiate about its nuclear program and its regional behavior. So anything that lets the foot off the gas is unfortunately not in America's interest, not in the Trump administration's policy, as he stated.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. I appreciate you giving us so much time on an important and also relatively complicated issue, and that's why we call on some experts in this case. Matthew Brodsky, no idea what the RJ stands for, so we're just going to ignore it. Senior fellow at the Gold Institute for International Strategy, and Happy New Year. You're done working now. Go home before the crazies are on the road.
Happy New Year. Thank you very much.
You betcha.